So we're going to transition now to learning more about the ever-evolving situation on Capitol Hill, and I'm pleased to turn this over to my colleague, Dr. Danny Richter, CCL's Vice President of Government Affairs. And Danny, the floor is yours.
All right. Thank you, Madeline. Thank you, Ayanna. It was good to see you again. And now let's talk about Congress a little bit. Next week, many of you are going into meetings with your members of Congress. And even if you aren't part of a lobby meeting, we are all invested in doing everything we can to get Congress to enact powerful climate solutions. 2 weeks ago, the political landscape simplified somewhat when the Bipartisan Infrastructure Framework, or BIF, passed the House. It had already passed the Senate months ago by a vote of 69 to 30. The 19 Republicans, including Mitch McConnell, who voted for that in the Senate, voted yes for a $1 trillion bill with $550 billion in new spending, with about a quarter of the new revenue going to help the United States mitigate and adapt to climate impacts. This is a big deal. When you add this to the 92 to 8 vote in the Senate for the Growing Climate Solutions Act, a bill with climate solutions in the title, you're dealing with a very different state of affairs than we have recently found ourselves in when engaging with Congress. There is some actual momentum here. So what is there left for you to do with your lobbying? Well, there's plenty to do. I'm going to speak about both Democrats and Republicans here, but let's start with the Democrats. For Democrats, the biggest prize is still yet to bag, a carbon price. We've made this the primary ask for all Democrats in both the House and the Senate. Include a strong carbon price in reconciliation. In both the House and the Senate, we feel it's important to root this request in the context of Biden's commitment to reduce U.S. emissions 50% below 2005 levels by the year 2030. And so that's in the first line of that one-page ask in bold font. It can be a bit hard to gauge where Democrats really are on this issue because there is no carbon price in the House version of the budget reconciliation bill. I'll just call it reconciliation for short in this talk, but it's also referred to as the Build Back Better bill or the social spending bill. There was no carbon price in President Biden's framework, which he outlined just before his recent trip to Europe in anticipation of Glasgow. And a Senate framework for budget reconciliation is still in the process of playing out with negotiations ongoing. So there really are some big questions here. But you've also seen a steady trickle of articles in the media that a carbon price is still a going concern in Senate discussions. Our discussions with Senate staff have confirmed these media reports and often enough have given us foreknowledge of what the media reports. It is also commonly understood on the Hill and in DC generally that the House is going to have to pass whatever the Senate sends them, which is how things played out, after all, with the $1.9 trillion reconciliation bill that was signed into law in March. This trickle of articles in the media began with the September 3rd leak from the Senate Finance Committee, first reported by Bloomberg, indicating a carbon price was under serious discussion by that committee. Chairman Wyden would later confirm this in public remarks. The biggest media footprint probably came with the announced death of the Clean Electricity Payments Program, where a carbon tax was mentioned as an alternative in the headline of a New York Times article on September 24th. And just last week, you have Senator Whitehouse being quoted from Glasgow as saying there was the support of 49 of the needed 50 senators for a price starting, quote, at less than $20 per ton and increasing over time, with revenue possibly rebated back to some consumers or dedicated to help fossil fuel workers amid the transition to clean energy, end quote. So there's been a pretty encouraging media narrative corroborated by our discussions with Senate staff that a carbon price is still under serious consideration and in fact has substantial support. So this is really good news. But as many of you have also noticed, there's also a strong counter narrative to this also in the press. You continue to hear, seems to me, louder, more frequent, and more numerous declarations of the death of a carbon price as part of reconciliation. It's almost as if reporters get paid to stir things up a bit and then crush whatever they just stirred up. And actually, now that I think about it, they do get paid to do that. So hard as it can be to believe, this status of a carbon price being mostly dead, as that second narrative would have, is probably actually ideal for us as people who want to see a carbon price enacted. A Senate staffer expressed this to me just a few days ago, that the media narrative where carbon price is mostly dead, but occasionally breaks through, is probably a sweet spot for those of us who want to see one pass. And for those of you who catch the reference to the Princess Bride in this description, you will probably also remember that someone who is mostly dead is also slightly alive, and that a miracle pill covered with chocolate so it goes down easier. And with that miracle pill, a mostly dead protagonist can be revived to storm the castle, defeat the evil prince, save the Princess Bride, and go on to live happily ever after. All that is to say, we are still in this. And so let's get back to this. What do Democrats need to hear from you, their constituents, in the next week? Well, while Senator Whitehouse's vote count is very encouraging, politicians have been known to get weak knees from time to time. In the Senate, your job is to be a knee brace for those politicians. To strengthen the resolve of Senate Democrats, let them know their constituents still support this and want to see it included in the final package. In the House, there's a widespread expectation that whatever they pass will go to the Senate, be rewritten, and then they will have to pass whatever the Senate sends them. There may be opposition. Our task this week is to make sure that if there is opposition, it is not on the basis of a carbon price being included, regardless of whether it's called a carbon price, a carbon tax, a carbon fee, or a corporate polluter fee. The bottom line is, we don't want that to be a sticking point in the House, and that's what we're trying to achieve next week. I will also note that some offices in the House, Democratic offices, may be inclined to avoid a substantive conversation with you by saying something along the lines of, we're already done with reconciliation. Or they might say, the House version doesn't include a carbon price, and thereby hoping to ignore that discussion with you. And if you do get this from House Democrats, I recommend you respond by saying, I understand that the House version doesn't include a carbon price, but one widely discussed narrative is that the House will be forced to vote on a Senate version of reconciliation, as happened earlier this year with the COVID and economy-focused reconciliation bill. If that Senate version includes a carbon price, I would like you to be informed and ready to vote yes. I think that's how you overcome that barrier, should it come up for you. Now let's turn to Republicans. In my two CCU webinars, I believe I made it very clear that I think it's unhelpful to discuss reconciliation with Republicans. It is just too easy for them in this context to shut down the conversation and not be constructive should they so choose. I even went so far as to recommend that if they bring up reconciliation, you should try to steer the conversation away from that and refocus the discussion on the growing Climate Solutions Act in the House, the RISE Act, or the Forest Act in the Senate. I believe this is still the best way forward. Now let's return for a moment to where I started this talk. With all the Republicans voting for the bipartisan infrastructure package and the growing Climate Solutions Act, there is a substantive difference in momentum between where we are now and where we were in previous Congresses. In addition to this, you have the Senate Climate Solutions Caucus, with seven Senate Republicans continuing to talk to Democrats about climate, and the Conservative Climate Caucus with 72 Republicans in it. As I said last week, a useful way to think about all these facts is that today, you have a lot of Republicans who are walking in the right direction on climate. Not all of them, not even most of them, but a substantial minority. When you're trying to get someone to walk in a particular direction, it's a lot easier to get them to your destination if they're already walking in that direction. It's much easier to get someone to walk faster in the direction they're already walking than it is to get someone to stop and turn around. Increasingly, this is our challenge, to get Republicans to walk faster in the direction of climate action. Some we definitely still need to turn around, particularly in the House, but we're a heck of a lot further than we were even in the last Congress. And this is what we can achieve this lobby day with Republicans. Get those who are walking in the right direction to walk faster, and getting those who still need to be turned around to start walking in the right direction. I think we are much more likely to be able to do that with the Growing Climate Solutions Act, the RISE Act, and the Forest Act than we are by talking about a carbon price or even a border carbon adjustment. It even occurs to me that at this moment in time, bringing up a carbon price or border carbon adjustment with Republicans while it is still a live issue for Democrats in reconciliation, could be hard, make that goal harder to achieve. So let's focus with Republicans on the Growing Climate Solutions Act in the House and the Rise and Forest Acts with Republicans in the Senate this lobby day. I also want to say that I know a lot of you have been and remain frustrated by difficulties getting meetings with your members of Congress. That's okay. It is not your fault. Reconciliation fatigue is a very real thing. As tired as we are of this process, which seems to have been going on this entire year, because it has, congressional staff are going to be more tired because they have to live it. This is definitely affecting our ability to get meetings. Recognize you're mostly dealing with overworked 20-somethings in these congressional offices. And please, this lobby day, put the long-term relationship above getting this meeting at this particularly unsettled time. But it really, really has been quite a long process, and it really has been very tiring. I find myself looking back on the past year, and I find myself thinking about Marshall Saunders, the founder of CCL. I sometimes wonder about what he would make of where we are now. For those of you who may not know my history with this organization, I first met Marshall in April of 2008, a mere 6 months after he founded CCL. I became one of the first handful of group leaders and found myself weekly on a call with Marshall and the other group leaders. What was drilled into me then and since is that Marshall founded this organization to fill an unmet need. He felt very strongly that there was a need for a truly grassroots organization built on appreciation and respect that empowered regular people to have their voices heard in our democracy. After the failure of Waxman-Markey in 2009, which was chalked up by later analysis to being driven too much by inside the Beltway interests, that focus sharpened to be about topping off the unrealized thresholds of political will at the right moment with a surge of clear and articulate constituent voices calling for what was needed to meet the demands of the climate crisis. When I look back at the past year, it's hard for me to feel anything other than pride at how well we've fulfilled this vision. In June, we highlighted how out of sync the United States was with respect to the rest of the developed world on a carbon price. Then in July, you see 19 Republican senators writing a letter, and I'm going to paraphrase here, begging President Biden to beg the European Union not to do their carbon border adjustment mechanism because it would mean we'd have to enact a carbon price here in the United States. It's not exactly the message we had hoped that Republican senators would take away from your meetings back in June, but at least we got through that the European Union carbon border adjustment mechanism is happening, it threatens our business interests, and that the problem could be solved by a carbon price. And so I chalk that up to being a success. I think about the three-week campaign we launched in July to write and call Senate offices and how incredible the response was from the people on this call. We got at least 52,000 calls and emails sent in those 3 weeks. And 1 month later, we saw the Finance Committee working on and considering a carbon price. I really do think we helped make that happen. When the New York Times article ran the headline, "Democrats Consider Adding Carbon Tax to Budget Bill," on September 24th, Representative Deutsch in the House tweeted out a series of thank yous to organizations that had helped bring and keep carbon pricing into the political discussion. CCL was the first organization he mentioned, and I know that was not an accident. How do I know? Well, I know because Deutsch's office went out of their way to tell me that that's why we were mentioned first. We were top of the list because no other organization has done more to take this policy issue and keep it viable, to keep it alive, to keep it in the center of the political discussion. I read Senator Whitehouse's comments from Glasgow that we have, quote, 49 out of 50 votes, end quote, from Democrats in the Senate. I just think about how incredible that is. Here's a policy the reporters seem to gleefully pronounce dead on a regular basis, that many other environmental organizations were unable or unwilling to put significant effort behind in this year when that effort would have been most needed. And not only is it still in the mix, but we are one vote shy. One vote shy of having the votes we need, according to the vote count of the senator on the budget committee that started the reconciliation process, on the finance committee that would write the language for a carbon price, and on the environment and public works committee that would write the methane fee, saying we're one vote shy. Guys, this is really, really incredible. So when I look back and I think about how Marshall wanted to fill the unmet needs of political will, I'm feeling pretty good about it. I don't know if it's going to end up being enough. I can't promise you that. But it is clear that we have done a heck of a lot, and it was a heck of a lot that no one else could or would do. If Marshall was still with us, I think he would be proud of the organization he founded this year. Thank you, and I believe we have some time for questions.
Yes, we do have questions. So our first question is about the dividend. So this person asked, how do we keep the focus on a carbon dividend? So can you talk about what the Senate is discussing regarding a dividend or some kind of cash rebate?
The discussions we've had with Senate staff on the right committee have indicated strongly that a dividend is already there. Not 100% dividend, but a substantial dividend, a dividend that is large enough to make the bottom two quintiles whole. So my view is we've already won on that count. If we win on getting the carbon price in, we've already won on the dividend. So that's my perspective there.
Great. We have another question asking about border adjustments. So this person says, it seems like a border adjustment is the answer to so many problems regarding other countries joining in with climate action. So where does a border adjustment stand in the current discussions in Congress?
I think a border adjustment is assumed. So if you get a carbon price, you get a border adjustment. I think things have also evolved. Some of you have been paying attention may remember that Senator Coons and Representative Peters introduced language for a border adjustment without a carbon price, trying to give credit for all the other climate mitigation strategies in the United States. And my sense is that that's been abandoned. So I think the only way we have a border adjustment is in the context of a carbon price. And again, that's like the dividend already kind of baked in. If you get the carbon price is the most unclear thing. If you get the carbon price, you get a substantial dividend, strong enough to make the bottom two quintiles whole, and you get a border carbon adjustment.
All right. This question asks, to what extent has CCL developed relationships with other organizations on this? So can you speak to any coalition work that we're doing?
It's extensive. We started a discussion back in March, and that discussion is has been a center for groups who are interested in this. We regularly have congressional staff on that to provide a view from inside the Hill, and I think that CCL is perceived as a leader and a go-to organization when it comes to a carbon price in reconciliation. Certainly we can't do everything, and part of the role we've been filling is to call on other organizations who have skills or competencies that we don't and ask them what they can do and work collaboratively to help achieve that. So it's quite extensive.
Great. Now I'm gonna give you the $1 million question. Where are things with Senator Joe Manchin and his support or his stance on a carbon price?
I think that is the $1.85 trillion question. I think that they're still alive. I think that Senator Manchin puts West Virginia first, as you would expect all senators to do. And so, but I also think he sees himself as a Democrat, and he wants to see the reconciliation bill succeed. And so I also think that the way that Democratic leadership in the Senate has carried on negotiations has been in good faith. And so I think that is why you see Senator Manchin continuing to engage. I think that Democrats in general feel very acutely that if they don't get anything, their prospects in midterm are even more grim than they otherwise would be. So I think that Senator Manchin is probably one of the savviest politicians in Washington. It's the job of a politician to make his or her self necessary to get what they can for their state or their district. And right now, Joe Manchin is the best politician in this country. So I think he remains engaged. I think he wants to see something get over the hill. He hasn't slammed the door on a carbon price yet, and we'll see what happens.
All right. And we have a couple questions of people getting creative in the Q&A, wondering, is there any way that we could get maybe one Republican vote in the Senate? We know Mitt Romney, Lisa Murkowski have expressed interest in carbon pricing. Is that a possibility, or is the would they dislike the rest of the bill too much?
It's not a possibility, and you should stop dreaming it. It's not helpful. Sorry to crush your dreams so completely, but they not helpful to hold that view.
All right. And how about the Biden administration? Some folks are wondering is where they stand on this, and is this something that would be still palatable in the context of inflation or concerns about energy prices? Where is the president and the White House on this?
I think that the president is recognizes that he is on this issue secondary to what the Senate can agree to. And so I think that President Biden will accept whatever Congress can deliver. I think he'll sign it. I personally would have liked to have seen a little bit more leadership on this particular policy issue from the president, but I don't have concerns that he will reject it on this basis.
Okay. And now a little bit of interest of things going on the other side of the aisle. We have a question of someone mentioning the Republican plan to that sets a target to reduce global emissions by 40% by 2050. And they're just asking what you've heard about this and what you think about it.
I think that this is a great example of Republicans walking in the right direction, but slower than they need to. 40% reductions by 2050 is not going to be enough. And so for this, I think it is helpful to acknowledge they're looking for solutions. I believe this is a genuine search for solutions. I believe that the Republicans who put that together really want to see emissions reduced. I think they really do see climate as a problem we need to solve, and they need to be a part of it. We need to get them to walk faster towards decarbonization.
All right. We have a couple folks have been watching the COP26 coverage and news and saw that Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, said something in Glasgow about carbon taxes that she's not aware of it or something like that. Can you speak to those types of comments coming out of the House?
Yeah, I believe Speaker Pelosi said she was not aware of a deal in the Senate. And I'm not aware of a deal either. I'm aware of ongoing discussions towards a deal. And so I think this is, again, an example of reporters who, I'm going to say it, they know less than we do about what's going on. I think they took her comment and made it seem worse than it was to make it seem like a carbon price was mostly dead and ignored the part that it's slightly alive. So I think when you read that, I agree with her statement. And I think that this has been blown out of proportion too. I think that Speaker Pelosi's biggest concern, she doesn't want to have a repeat of 2009, where she sent a carbon price to the Senate and the Senate never took it up. And so her perception is that was really difficult for her majority in the coming midterms, and she's not going to repeat that mistake. She's not going to do something, take that risk for her moderates until she sees something from the Senate. And then once she sees something for the Senate, she's going to do her all to pass it, whatever's in there. I think that's where Speaker Pelosi is.
All right. And we have 3 minutes left, so we'll wrap it up with a final question here. This person is asking, if a carbon price is passed in a way that does not exactly align with CCL's desires, would we then fight to alter the policy in the future?
It depends. So we have always been what we're for, but we have also always known that there was going to be a process of negotiation. And I think I've been pretty clear over the years, our two bottom lines are it's got to take a big chunk out of emissions, and it's got to be good for the bottom 40% of households. I think in the context of this bill, I don't think it makes sense to look just at the carbon price. Mark has been fond of saying over the years, CCL does not exist to pass carbon fee and dividend. We exist to create the political will for a livable world. There's not just one way of doing that. And so I think we are looking at the bill as a whole. We're looking at the total emissions reductions, and going back to that first line of the one page ask for Democrats, that goal, that science-based goal of getting to a 50% reduction below 2005 levels by 2030. That's the benchmark that we're going to weigh the carbon price and all the other climate provisions that are in a reconciliation package, should one pass. And we're going to figure out what we can do moving on from that. Certainly, if there's a carbon price, we're going to be interested in defending it. If there are opportunities to make it stronger, we'll look for those opportunities. But we are not going to limit our analyses to just the carbon price component. We're not going to limit our analyses of the bill itself or its impact to what is the carbon price doing, because this is a global biogeochemical cycle. This is a large economy, and we need to look at all parts of it and what we're doing for that bottom line goal of a 50% emissions reductions by 2030 below 2005 levels. And you know what happens once we get to 50% below 2005 levels? Then we go after the other 50%. That's what we're going to do. So I'll end my comments there.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Citizens Climate Lobby's training program. You can tune into more episodes anywhere podcasts are available. Inspired by what you heard today? Join Citizens Climate Lobby to advocate for bipartisan climate solutions. Go to community.citizensclimate.org to find more trainings, resources, your local chapter, national action teams, discussion forums, and more. Be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram @CitizensClimate. We also invite all of our listeners to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more inspiration. And together, we are creating the political will for a livable world.